Hey, I'm Sky. That's Daisy.
Hi, I'm Daisy.
And what's the name of your band?
We're in the band Foxy Shazam.
And what do you play?
I play piano, Daisy plays bass and mandolin. Lauren joined Eric's band, kicked out all the bad members. And then once it got not so bad sounding, eventually I joined it, and
I wasn't in the band for about the first year, and then you went to college for a year, and they toured with another keyboard player, and then they kicked out Skylin, and I joined, because I was in a band that knew Foxy at the time, called Ion in Louisville, Kentucky, and then we both sort of, like, permanently joined at the same time. Well, you were, like, in it, but you were in college or whatever, and at the University of Kentucky in Lexington, Kentucky, and then we started touring all the time. We played with, what, like 10 drummers in a year and a half or something like that? And then Joe begged to be in our band, so we let him be in our band.
Yep.
And, yeah, and so, and then I think around that time we had been touring a little bit before that, but we started majorly touring probably about 16 months ago, about a year and a half ago, I think.
I feel like Cincinnati influenced me because musically it kind of sucks. I grew up playing in a surf band, and venues treated us bad, and then I started playing in a more rock and roll kind of thing, that the surf metal band, the Lab Jackets, and venues also treated us bad, and then in high school I was playing in a cover band that got treated really well and made more money than my band now makes. Like, my band that played bad covers, we were a horrible band. A bunch of nice guys, like my brother and a couple elder guys, like the big like football white guy school. Like, good dudes, like everybody, like good musicians and everything, but like we just weren't that great, and like people really didn't care, but we still got paid more, like could get shows. We got two shows every week. Like, we got steady shows and got paid like $400-500 a week. Like, right now we're getting paid $150 a day and we're drawing hundreds of people. Like Cincinnati just like really takes care of crappy cover bands, and it makes it really hard for everybody else. So like, Cincinnati definitely influenced me because it really pissed me off about that. Like, it doesn't, like, it might be getting better now, but I don't really know, so.
I mean, Cincinnati really doesn't have, like, notably doesn't have really anything going on musically almost ever, really. I mean, I guess it's bad to say or whatever, but it just seems like all the bands are, like, kind of the same and not very interesting, and, like, people aren't very excited about it, and it's kind of, whereas Cincinnati, it's like you really don't have a choice but to leave town, because you're not really going to find any fame or fortune or whatever you might find, or popularity you'd find in a local scene somewhere else. Like, there's not that element to it, really. Like, if you're going to be in a band from there, you're going to have to get out of town and prove yourself somewhere else. Like, no one really even, I didn't feel like anybody gave a shit about us in Cincinnati until we started doing really well out of town, really.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it just seems like nobody really cares if you are that great of a band in Cincinnati until you, like, go out of Cincinnati and prove it to people. MySpace makes bands lazy. That's one bad thing about MySpace, if you're wanting to start getting into that. Like, bands think that it's promoting, like, to post a bulletin, or like to, I don't know, change a MySpace layout or put up a picture or something real, not really that big of a deal, where we would spend the time to hand make 200 posters and go around the city and like put them up, to have them take them down, and then we'll put them up the next day and until they give up. I mean, just leave them up. 100 people that'll come out to every single one of these places. Is that about right? Like, most of these, and these are the weird markets too.
We can probably draw in any market. We can probably draw around 100 people. Some a little more, some a little less.
It's touring heavily. Like we played close to 200 shows a year for the last. Like this year has been around 200. The year before is maybe like 150 or something like that. The year before that was. This one's close to 200, though. Yeah,
I counted it up to something like 160, something like that this year, by the end of the year. One thing with the touring popularity is at the outset of this band, there was a lot of, on Lauren and Eric's part, the guitarist, mainly Lauren's, there was a lot of MySpace doing and a lot of MySpace promotion, like friending, like what Lauren sat on the internet and friended people for like a year or something like that.
Yeah, he didn't do anything but add people on MySpace, and that made it so we could start touring early.
Yeah, that got to like, a certain level with that. Like, there was a certain level of like, which is the same thing Ian did to some extent too. Like, there was a certain level that it got to.
Internet has anything to do with actual shows. All it does is help people come out. Like, of course, we can notice, like, if we're getting more plays on one song or another, but I don't think that has anything to do with what we actually play.
I think it definitely affects who comes out, like the kind of people who first started liking our band, like as opposed to like a band that just toured and like that word got out that way, like that would be a crowd that generally likes live music probably, whereas if word got out on the internet, it would be a crowd that you know, is more internet. They get their, rather than seeing live music and getting would be a crowd that would get their musical taste from the internet. So it would automatically be a different subset. Like, it would be a probably younger, probably more savvy crowd, you know, in general. That makes sense.
I noticed after we got a... we had an interview and a live show on Xbox 360 on, like, Xbox Live. And so... we definitely had a large increase of nerds at shows, which was awesome. Get to talk video games with kids. Like, it's awesome. Like the next day, I started, like, people brought it up to me. Like, as soon as it came out, like, yeah, I saw you on Xbox 360 or on Xbox Live and came out. Like that's so weird. Like, how does that make any sense?
Well, it's just the same way that at first, like, with the banners and stuff like that, like, seemed like a lot of that was aimed at more like the MSI Tubring kind of crowd because we played with those bands.
Yeah.
And so those kind of kids ended up coming out. Yeah. To me, it definitely can affect it. Like, it has more effect, I think, on the audience rather than like music, really. I mean, people show up and ask for No Don't Shoot because they heard it on the internet, which probably wouldn't have happened without MySpace. Well, I don't know, maybe it would have.
Probably most people that hear our band probably hear us first on MySpace, or they see us play, and then go to our MySpace and listen to our band and see how much they like the actual recordings. But like a community, I don't know how much our fans communicate to each other through MySpace. Like I know we have, like I think we have like a message board now or something. And yeah, I think we have a message board, and I know. Like, I know Rosie and Holly always contact people, and, like we have friends that met, that they've kept in contact through MySpace, but I wouldn't really call it a community. Like, we have our good friends around the country, and, like...
I think one of the secret subplots of Foxy Shazam, especially for me and you, is this, like, secret covert community building.
Yeah.
Like this weird connecting of people over many, many thousands of miles.
An army of awesome friends.
Yeah, and like that has more to do with like real life, like just like us introducing people to each other than like anything to do with MySpace or whatever. Like the thing, like sites like MySpace, and it's not just folks on MySpace, like MySpace and Friendster and Facebook and whatever else is popular now, like they create the illusion of community, but they don't really create communities. Like, they create forums for people to talk about things, but anonymously, in a way that, like, if you want to have a real community, you're not going to be able to have that level, you're going to have to give up that level of anonymity to experience the closeness of a community. So, things like that, no, I'd actually say almost not at all. Like, it seems like people who like our band, whereas, like, before, like, in earlier ages of rock and roll, people would form communities based on their common interest in a band or based on their common interest in a style of music. That actually doesn't happen as much anymore. People, like, people be talking to us and they won't be talking to each other. And I'm like, why don't, it seems unnatural. It's like, they're focusing us. It's like, why don't you also talk among yourselves? Like, that seems like what should be happening. But it's like, almost until, like, we're like, hello, you should meet each other.
Yeah.
Be friends. Like, until that happens, a lot of the time people don't, which is kind of odd. Like, it seems more that the internet kind of disarms community rather than encourages it, if you think about it that way. I mean, depending on the city, like, different cities have different avenues for becoming popular, getting, spreading your message, or whatever you prefer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, Cincinnati and the scene there seems very internet-driven. Like, I mean, everybody in Cincinnati, like, everything's, like, 45 minutes apart. Like, there's not really any common gathering area at all. Like, the clubs.
College area is, like, common gathering area, but there's no...
No one venues.
Yeah, I know. There's no shows except at Bogart's and pretty much Northern Kentucky has taken most of Cincinnati's music scene because, like, the Mad Hatter and Madison Theater both
Southgate House,
like, they all actually, like, take care of bands. Like, they, like, they pay bands. They put bands on, like, local bands on bills and, like. Like, treat them well. Like, most of the bad venues and, like, most of the things that I really didn't like about Cincinnati have, like, finally gone under. Like, Sudsy Malone's is gone. Like the first time we played there, the owner or something, like, banned us from ever playing there and, like, threatened to beat us up or something. Like just really dumb stuff. And... like, a whole lot of the bad places, like, music industry usually does eventually lead to justice. If a place is bad, doesn't isn't nice to the people that come, like, it isn't nice to the bands, don't have a good sound system, it will go under eventually. It might last a while, but it'll go under eventually. Like, places that really care about what they do, it'll work well, and... like, it'll keep going, and bands will love to play there, and people will love to go there. And, like, I feel like Cincinnati is starting to get a little bit more, like, positive.
Well, like, it's not Cincinnati, though. It's Northern Kentucky. Like, the only
yes.
people I feel like who are really, like, encouraging a scene there is, like, Frank and his whole crew at the Mad Hatter, and, like, Matt, and, like, those, what, Taylor, and all those, the people who are associated with that, and that's, like, all Northern Kentucky. Most of those kids who go to those shows don't hang out and, like, aren't from Northern Kentucky. They're from Fairfield or Milford or who knows, you know, Carrollton, whatever. Like, there's no centralized area where things happen. Like, there's, like, a centralized kind of hip area. Like, there's Clifton, there's North Side. But those, that's almost, like, just areas people live. Like, there's no, like, centralized scene there.
But, like, isn't it definitely, like, probably 70% or so of the people that come to see us in Northern Kentucky are from Cincinnati, though.
Yeah, that's what
so
I'm
like,
saying.
So, like, Cincinnati's
not,
scene is
no,
in Northern
saying.
Kentucky.
That's
like,
what I'm saying, but there's no... there's, but that's not centralized because they don't live there.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, they don't hang out there most of the time. Like, that's why I feel like the Cincinnati area scene is so dependent on MySpace and things like that for promotion and to try and feel like it's a community. It's very dependent on the internet. Because everything's 45 minutes apart.
Yeah.
I just learned that the 275 Beltway, I'm going to share this with whoever's listening, the 275 Beltway around Cincinnati is the longest loop highway in the United States, and it's like the fourth largest, longest in the world. It seems like there's different avenues where, like, if we lived in Washington, D.C., for instance, like, there's a very entrenched culture for independent music, and where, I mean, generally, I mean, you play with your friends' bands, and play shows, and, like, this sort of a different way of going about it, where it's generally more about, like, there's a culture around live music, whereas in somewhere like Cincinnati, it's not so much a culture around live music. Like, yeah, we've lived somewhere else, and it would have totally affected how we started. I mean,
yeah, we're a rock and roll band. I don't know if Cincinnati has anything to do with that or not. Because, like, yes, it does, because we all grew up, like those of us from Cincinnati grew up in Cincinnati with all these, like, with a lot of bad bands surrounding us that, and, like, even good bands couldn't get good shows or couldn't do about anything to make your band progress. So, like, yes, being in Cincinnati did make us into what we are, and maybe stylistically want to do a lot more different stuff just because we're surrounded by so much of the same dumb stuff. But it wasn't like Cincinnati's like, hey, this you should play this because other people are playing this, or you should play this because it's cool. It's like, hey, you should play probably something that's a lot different than all this other stuff that's really dumb.
There's been a couple. Now that I think about it, there's been a couple good bands.
But they never really get too far. Like, nobody. They
have their own little scene around them, and, like, their friends come. Like,
yeah.
I've seen many good bands just, like, kind of have their own little clique of people and their own little incestuous drama, and, like, they'll have a show and their friends will come out and it's fun or whatever, and then they go have their party and then go to work the next day, and, like, maybe they want it to go beyond that, but they don't really have a impetus to go beyond that.
Yeah, just everybody plays in Cincinnati, stays there, breaks up. Like, that's 99.9% of bands in Cincinnati.
Even the really creative ones?
Yes. Even great bands just kind of sit there until something bad happens.
9 years later, I watch my only daughter walk beautifully down the aisle as she turns to me and says the 6 words I'll remember for the rest of my life.
E-O-A-H-A-B-I-G-A-T-I-P-I-G-A-T-I-P-O-O!
Do you think that the regional music scene is dead?
Well, regionally being, like, I feel like there's a little bit difference in northern bands and there's a difference in southern bands, but I wouldn't...
There's a difference in California bands.
Yeah, there's a difference in California bands.
But it's not even, like, sound anymore, though.
Yeah,
like, I feel
exactly.
Like, it's differences in, like, how
the
people act.
And dress. And,
yeah.
Like, how they do their hair.
Well, it's even, like, there's a certain scene we travel in, which is this sort of, like... At one point was more like the Tub Ring kind of, like, MSI, like, wacky kind of, you know, scene, and now it's more like, I mean, this is more like flippy hair, like, tight girl pants 16-year-old scene with, like, colorful clothing, which I don't know what it's called, what that thing is called, but it exists. Yeah, but scenesters are just, like, really the little brothers of hipsters. That's the dark secret of all that. Like, hipsters disavow the scene kids, but, like, it's really the same thing.
Yeah.
And hipsters, older brothers who are now in their 30s, were all indie rockers. That's where all this really comes down. Like, this is like this whole power structure that each of them disavows the one after them. But in that scene, like, it seems like there's no, except for how people act, like, in terms of culture from different areas, like, there doesn't really seem to be musical differences in the bands most of the time. But there's so much codes in between things that really don't matter. I mean, like, and I mean, at one point that served a purpose, but now it really doesn't. Like, there was at one point where people needed to identify their own by a code of dress, and, like, before the internet, before things like, you know, grunge and punk became widely popular, like, if you saw another kid with a mohawk, then you'd probably get along with that person. You probably knew that. But that was also a bold statement. I'm sorry, but, like, it's not really a substantial statement to dress a certain way anymore. Like, almost there's nothing you can wear or a way you can style your hair or whatever that is really going to make a radical statement about yourself to other people that's worth. MTV definitely made a lot of things popular and acceptable by bringing, you know, various kinds of music and styles of dress and everything into homes across the country, and then the internet obviously did the same thing, but on a more interactive level. I mean, ultimately, I mean, it's not good to, like, I think it's dumb when people, like, fetishize, like, the old days or whatever, like, especially with, like, given the example of DIY punk, like, people often romanticize, like, hardcore in the 80s, which was, like, very violent, very male-centered, like, very misogynist a lot of the time, like, sometimes bordering on, like, weird white power. It's like, people sometimes fetishize things being, when things were harder. I mean, to an extent, like, when things are hard, things are interesting. You know, and things, you tend to learn things from hard experiences. Like, you don't learn things from easy experiences. Like, I don't know. I think it's definitely better in terms of some things, but I think in other ways, like, in terms of, like, real art being made and real culture happening, I think it's lost authenticity because it's more standardized, and, you know.
Yeah.
I think there's still people who do weird stuff, but it's not as much regional or cultural. It's just because they're wing nuts and or they want attention. For instance, like, a very good example would be, and this is an example of how it has affected negatively, to answer your question, is the whole hardcore dancing, quote unquote. Like, there's this thing where people swing their arms around and do karate moves, and they actually warm up before the show and, like, do it in the mirror at home and all this fucking goofy, retarded, fucking macho football team bullshit. And, like, yeah, it's, like, standardized now, just as much as, like, MTV made, like, the mosh pit something that happened at every concert in the mid-90s. Like, there's this standardized form of, like, rather than, like, dressing up in robot suits and battling each other during the band, which could have been a standard, like, what became popular was the mosh pit in the mid-90s, just as the mosh pit was what it was then. Now the standard is this goofy Power Ranger hardcore dancing, and which is, I mean, that's a negative effect, because, you know, little people and girls and, like, people who are smaller, like, can't get up front and can't enjoy the music more. People get, you know, can't dance because they'll get fucking beat, and, like, shit like that continuously happens now because of something that has been ritualized through the internet and through MTV at the sort of hardcore scene kind of shows, whatever you want to call it. So yeah, I mean, it can definitely have a negative effect too, you know? Well, I think there's a level at which, like, that's how people learn about it in general, don't you think? And, like, mosh pits, like, that sort of thing, like, probably happened, but happened in, like, several different ways. Like, there was no standardized mosh pit until, like, that started to become, like, a publicized thing. Like, there were, like, things on the news in, like, 1992, like, mosh pits, new danger for kids at concerts, like, kids are being killed, you know, like, it became this media phenomenon. Actually, there's, like, hundreds of different kinds of events that still happen to this day, but people only, you know, I don't know, people think a certain way about culture because of mass media. Like, there's this oversimplification of culture because of that. Bigger cities in general, like, this actually may not be true. In most bigger cities, not the biggest cities, people are generally pretty jaded and are sort of, like, hang out and, like, watch it, and they sort of may enjoy it, may not, don't really care. Like, smaller towns, and especially very small places, people go absolutely apeshit. Like, go crazy.
People will be, like, crowd surfing on top of people crowd surfing. Because there's, like,
people are crowd surfing upside down on the ceiling.
Yeah, like there's, like, they get fewer shows, so they really, it means a lot more when they see a show. So people are there, not like in New York City, you can go out to see probably any band, like a band you'd like every single day. Like, you could find a band you'd like every single day. Or in LA, you could find a band you would like every single day. In Mayfield, Kentucky, they might get two bands that they would enjoy seeing in a year. So, like, say you're from Mayfield, Kentucky, and a band you like is playing there, the entire time you're going to be like, yes! Yes! Like, it's one of the best things that could happen. Like, and it really means a lot to them. Like, the music, the shows, everything means a lot to them. Where it's just kind of is. It's just kind of there in places that it's there.
People also have a whole stereotype about places like the Mayfield, Kentuckys of the world, or the Whitesburg, Kentuckys, or the Waco, Texas, is not getting weirder music and not being as cultured as, like, New York City, say, or wherever. Like, but the truth is that places like that almost, like, end up being more open to weirder stuff because, like, they don't often, people who live there don't always have this idea of like a hierarchy of like what kind of music is what kind of music and what they're supposed to like and what they're not supposed to like. Like, generally I find that in places like that, people take it a lot more at face value what we do. Like, they're sort of like, I like this or I don't like it. And a lot of the time I feel like the reaction is more positive because people don't have a whole preconceived notion of what they like and what they don't like. And plus, I mean, on top of that, as you said, people are more appreciative. Like, it seems like when people are given the opportunity to have culture, like, they take that opportunity. It's not something where people are like, what the fuck is this shit? You know, like, it's really not like that. Like, people generally appreciate interesting culture.
Alright, you guys have definitely given us plenty of material. Do you have, like, closing remarks?
Naps.
Music is stupid.
Music is stupid. And naps are good.
Music ruined our lives. And now we are destitute
to talking to little microphones in a bedroom.